What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk. It is Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host is Canucks insider Thomas Trance, who of course also covers the team for The Athletic. Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. What's going on, Drance?
Not much, buddy. How are you? What's
doing up? Great. What is up? Dom started like egging me on before this show. Right as I'm about to turn my mic on and start the show, Dom's like mocking me about saying what's up, and it's very annoying. So I don't know. It's gotten me in my head a little bit with the what's ups.
I don't know. Get with the vibe. I used to mock it too. Now I'm in.
Now you're on board. I'll convert Dom eventually. He'll get on board with it. He'll be all in. Yeah. Just like everyone else.
He'll figure out what is in fact up.
Yes, exactly. One day we'll get the answer to the question. We'll finally nail it down. And I can stop asking it every day because we'll know, in fact, what is up. Of course, what's up today on the show? Of course, it is a crossover Wednesday. Always very exciting. Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal from Donnie and Dhali will join us in just a few minutes. And then, of course, we'll chat with Jason Bukala later on in the show. But just before we are joined by Donnie and Dhali here, I mean, a fairly newsy, as per offseason, per May, when you're not playing standards, 24 hours or so for the Vancouver Canucks, starting with the announcement yesterday that the Canucks have mutually parted ways with assistant coach Mike Yeo, who, of course, was a holdover from the Bruce Boudreau staff, some of whom were let go when Boudreau was, but Mike Yeo wasn't. He stayed on. He was responsible for the penalty kill this year, and our own Satyar Shah reported that the team had made him a contract offer, but Mike Yeo decided to explore other opportunities.
Yeah, I mean, multiple departures from Canucks coaches with sort of the messaging being, well, they were made an offer and they're departing to explore other opportunities. You know, successful coaches that are parts of successful staffs don't tend to depart to explore other opportunities for no reason. You know, typically it's because of contractual impasses, budgetary sort of constraints, right? And I think that's, I think that's what's shaped Colleton's departure from the American League staff. And of course, it's notable the club losing a top AHL head coach and replacing him with Manny Malhotra, a name that resonates locally, but who has zero head coaching experience at the professional ranks. An obvious gap in what you'd expect in terms of evaluation there. And I would think it's probably a similar story here. You know, we made him an extension offer, yeah, but is it a one-year deal with not a significant raise for a guy who oversaw, you know, a turnaround on the penalty kill from historically bad to roughly average, right? And, you know, one thing, too, that changed for the Canucks on the PK as the year went along was, like, you had a lot less JT Miller. You had a lot less Philip Peronic. You had a lot less Quinn Hughes, right? And you had more Ian Cole, Neil Simon,
Dakota Joshua. Yeah.
Teddy Bluger, right? Like, you saw a bunch of role players, you know, who were sort of leaned on as the solution. And then the club ends up dominating the Predators, right? 4-on-5 in the first round and doing a heck of a job. I mean, if you don't kill off 12 consecutive Oilers penalties or power play opportunities in games 4, 5, and 6, like that series probably doesn't go 7. You probably don't push the Oilers to the brink in game 5. You know, so the one thing that I sort of come back to on that is, you know, 17th on the PK, you can look at it and say, well, that's not a huge loss. That's what Mike Yeo ran, was the Canucks PK. But it takes real weight to have your solutions be, hey, the stars are going to play less. The guys with the loudest voices in that room are going to play less. Mike Yeo sort of did that. And to me, that's the departure, because you're going to bring in another guy. You know, given this sort of track record that we've seen with both Colleton and Yeo's departures, maybe you're not bringing in a guy with the same level of experience and weight, a guy with multiple, you know, head coaching stops on his resume the way Yeo has, to replace him. And he's going to have to go through that process again, right? Like that, which is not a simple process internally. So that to me is sort of the big question stemming from this is, you know, how much are the multiple departures budget related? And, you know, on the PK side in particular, do you start from square one in terms of the messaging internally about who's going to be part of the solution and the probability that the players that are going to be part of the solution, you know, A, may not even be on the roster, but B, also aren't going to be the guys who necessarily have the loudest voices or the most at stake in that room, which can be a tricky internal conversation for a club to navigate.
Well, and of course, we were already wondering, and we got kind of mixed messaging on this at the year-end availability, but would they make an additional coaching hire to help with the power play and to take the power play responsibilities off of Rick Tocchet's plate? Now, as you said, you lose an assistant who is running the other special teams unit who has previous head coaching experience, and there's a pretty sizable gap to fill on that bench, I think, right? At least one key hire coming, whether it's a penalty kill focus guy, a power play focus guy, whatever the case may be. But there's a pretty major opening now on the Canucks bench with the departure of Mike Yeo. So,
well,
go ahead.
You also only have Adam Foote among
full-time assistants. Yeah.
Right? So, like, because you've got other assistants who are part-timers. You've got Ian Clark, who's not technically an assistant coach. He's the goaltending coach and the director of goaltending for the organization. So, I do think you can have too much staff, but I also, you know, will be curious to see exactly how this evolves. I mean, Rick Tocchet didn't sound like he wanted to hire a power play coach. I think that's an error. I think they should get a specialized power play coach, but definitely someone to replace Yeo is going to be essential. And I'm watching because I'll be surprised if it's someone with the same level of sort of experience, and the price point that implies. Who will join Tocchet's staff.
I do wonder if part of the answer here is, as you said, there's one full-time assistant in Adam Foote. Does Sergei Gonchar become full-time? Is that something that he would be interested in as opposed to his part-time role now? That could be at least part of it, and then you go out and make the one additional external hire. But we'll see how it shakes out from here. But that was the Canucks news yesterday, parting ways with Mike Yeo. All right, it is time for the crossover with our pals Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal from Donnie and Dhali on Check TV. You can check them out Monday to Friday, 10 to noon on Check TV. The crossover is brought to you by Besant Motors, home of over 400 pre-owned vehicles and where the players go. Rick, Donnie, how's it going?
Great. Very well. Very well. Very good. Just finishing up a fun show.
I'm glad to hear it. Is the studio cold, Donnie?
Like yours. You know what? Honestly, I like to keep it. I've got a very important appointment I need to get to. Not to rush things.
Okay.
I like to keep the studio cold. Okay, like David Letterman. I'm not saying I'm in his league. I'm just saying that's what I like. Rick and Ryan are they seem like old men here. They want it to be a million degrees, and we fight about it all the time. Today's a little on the cool side, and I like it.
I got a shirt underneath. I got two shirts on because...
Good.
You've got two shirts and a parka on, Rick.
It's like... And a parka. It's like minus 20 in here. We're in the bottom of a building. Taylor won't let us turn the heat on.
No, that's not true. I get outnumbered all the time.
I asked for the heat to get cranked, and they won't let me turn the heat up. I'm telling you, it's really cold in our studio.
Mr. Fort St. John likes it warm and toasty.
Yeah, when Donnie and I were paying our dues up north, it was cold. I will say that.
But you had the heat on, I'm sure, when you were working up north, right, Rick? That's how you survived. You have to run the heat up there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But Taylor here won't let us turn the heat on.
No.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Make me sound like some sort of tyrant.
You are.
Or at least a reptile.
It's not like that at all.
Yeah. Cold-blooded. I've heard of, you know, people like
cold-blooded,
like guys won't let their families turn on the heat at home, right? Because they don't want the heating bill to go up. But
yeah,
surely you're not on the hook for the heating bill, Donnie.
Oh, I run this whole operation. Yes, I am on the hook for the heating bill and everything else. Coffee, you name it.
Everything.
That explains a lot. All right, we were just, I know you guys talked to J.P. Barry today. There's reports out there about Tyler Myers, so there's a lot to get into. We were just having a quick conversation about Mike Yeo leaving the organization, which was announced yesterday, and kind of what the coaching staff might look like next year, because as we were saying, right now only one full-time assistant for Rick Tocchet on staff, that's Adam Foote. Of course, there's Sergei Gonchar, who's part-time, you know, the Sedins, who are doing development work as well. Rick, do you have a sense of, you know, what the direction this is going in here?
The coaching?
Yeah.
You yeah. see what I have to deal with
not,
here?
He said the direction.
It was a poor question.
I'll own it.
The direction of the
third fabulous question. Yeah.
No, he rattled off Tyler Myers, then went into the coaching.
Who's a defenseman?
Okay, yeah. But the coaching thing, it's caught me off guard, guys. This is the second coach that's rejected a contract offer in the last week, left the organization. First, Jeremy Colton, a coach, by the way, they raved about, and he's no longer here. Now Mike Yeo, he joined the team in the Bruce Boudreau in the final season. Yeo was offered a one-year deal. That's not exactly a ringing endorsement, guys. Hey, we loved the job you did. We had a great season. Hey, come back for one more year. That was not, to me, a ringing endorsement. But here's what I'll say. Coaches are no different than players. They'd like to see raises, too. They'd like to see term on contracts. They want to climb the ladder. They want to become head coaches. They're no different than the players. They want to reach the absolute top of their profession as well. There are so many coaches. You know, last night somebody said to me, you know, there's so many coaches in the NHL looking for assistance right now, like all these new guys getting hired, and it's a good time to get offers if you're a coach. It's a really good time. And I think Donnie's mentioned this. In Vancouver, you got to look at the way Tocchet, coach of the year, he's going to get an extension. His assistant coaches, Foote and Gonchar, are really good. I just don't see a path to development, to being the path to being a head coach in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, if the way Tocchet's going, he should get a 4 or 5 year extension. I'm just saying. So a lot of these guys might be thinking, you know what? I don't think there's a path to being a head coach, but don't blame the coaches. They're like the players and like everyone else in society. When their contracts are up, they want the best possible deal as well.
I just think visually it might be really surprising for a lot of people, just because so many times over the last couple of years, you see Rick Tocchet, and you know this, Thomas, Rick Tocchet constantly talk with Mike Yeo on the bench during crucial moments in a game. He does the strategy at the end of games on the whiteboard, or not at the end of games, but near the end of games on the whiteboard when there's a timeout, and sometimes to talk to the players, defer to him. So, like, visually, I found it surprising. Obviously, there's a lot more to it. And like Rick says, you know, both Mike Yeo and Jeremy Colton are former NHL head coaches, you know, and the guy in front of them just won an Adams Award, so they don't see it. That path. But I always noticed that at those crucial moments that he would always talk with Mike Yeo.
I just think it's very unlikely that an assistant coach is looking at his options and thinking, well, this coach is too secure. You know, like, coaches are also teammates, right? Like, an assistant coach tends to want to be part of a winning organization, not because they're going to take the head guy's job, but because they're going to get a job elsewhere as a result of being part of a successful group. You know, I mean, if Mike Yeo surfaces, and I saw Patrick Johnston at the Province float Toronto as a possibility, given the pre-existing relationship between Berube and Yeo, it's like, right, Yo's going to end up on a staff with another coach who signed long-term. So I'm sure in Colleton's case, you know, again, like, whether you're being held in reserve or building your, you know, sort of resume in the American League, whether or not you have a chance to take over from the main guy within your organization, you know, you want to be part of a successful group, and this club seems to be on the rise. Like, I'd be stunned if that's the motivation and not just an overall sort of you know, dollars and cents approach, that these coaches just don't like the offers that they're getting. And you know, that to me is sort of interesting, just given how much money I think we expect this organization to pay players over the course of the next 6 weeks. Rick, what do you think the budget impact of this is? Is it budget, or is it something else?
It's a combination of everything. Colleton's a little different than Yo because he's like that player in the American League trying to get to the NHL. And, you know, he's already had the sniff head coach in Chicago. But he's totally different than Yo. Yo, is, if it was just dollars and cents, I could see it being, you know what, hey, I'd like to have term. I'd like to have more money. But Colleton's a little different. I mean, he still wants to get back. You have to admit his goal would be to become a head coach in the NHL. Yeah, but the other thing, Thomas, you have to look at, how many coaches have been fired since last year? 18, 19?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
The turnover is amazing. And these guys got to be thinking, okay, are owners that impatient now where they're just going to fire everybody? How many guys, and Donnie mentioned this, how many guys were fired this year with their new contract not even kicking in yet? So,
oh,
I mean, look what the coaches are thinking. Head coaches don't have much time in the NHL to turn things around anymore.
Yeah, it's a while.
I never heard anybody say Mike Yo was doing a bad job. Like, I never, like, again, Thomas, no. you would obviously hear more than I do, but I never heard anybody saying he was doing a really poor,
no.
a poor job. But maybe that one-year offer speaks to that. I'm not sure.
And same with Jeremy Colleton, right? We never heard anything but really, really positive things about the work he was doing in Abbotsford. Okay, on the player side of things, we heard the report on 32 Thoughts from Elliot Friedman that there's real optimism that the Canucks and Tyler Myers might be able to work something out. And not a big surprise, right? We know about his connections here. You heard him speak last week, and he was very upfront and honest about how much he'd like to come back. Rick, what are you hearing on a potential deal between the Canucks and Myers? Could this be something that they get out of the way relatively quickly here before, you know, we're still a month plus away from the opening of free agency?
Well, his agent was on, and we asked him about that, J.P. Barrie, and J.P. just said that they know we want to be there, but they got other priorities. I don't sense there's anything imminent with Tyler Myers, like something's going to happen today or tomorrow. But I will say this. I have been saying for weeks and weeks that Myers wants back in Vancouver. He's the easiest contract to do. He's going to go from $6 million to around $3 million. He's got the offseason home in Kelowna. He told JP many months ago, he informed him that get the deal done in Vancouver. The Canucks know this. Of all the Canucks UFAs, this is the simplest contract to do because he's the only one that's going to take a pay cut. The rest of them all got their hands out for big raises. So the Canucks can't let Myers and Zadorov both go. That's too much size. One of those are going to be back. And the simple contract, everybody, and I've been saying this for a long time, is Myers. He's taken the pay cut. No one else has taken the pay cut that he's taken.
Yeah, and then we had J.P. Barrie on, as Rick mentioned, Tyler Myers' agent, among others, Elias Pettersson included. But usually when you ask an agent a question like that, like, does Tyler Myers want to come back? The answer will be something like, yeah, but you know what? A lot of other teams want him.
Yep.
We're not committing to him. But he just focused, JP did, on Vancouver. And that wasn't normal agent talk for me. Mm-hmm. So I think, like Rick says, this will definitely be the, I don't know if it'll be easy, but it'll be the easiest. And then you have the fact that he lives in Kelowna. And my answer to that initially was, well, so does every other player in the National Hockey League, pretty much, or at least 80% of them. And somebody made the point to me that, you know, one thing you got to remember is that, you know, Tyler's got a young family, mm-hmm. they're established, and, you know, it's a lot easier to, you know, make that move and set things up for your kids, Kelowna to Vancouver, and I'm sure they're set up already for Tyler, than it is Kelowna to Carolina or somewhere else.
Yeah, big time.
So, Rick, let me ask you a question really quick about Myers, because I agree with you. I expect that he will return. But we are talking about a guy who, you know, among all unrestricted free agent defenders who shoot right? Only Dylan DeMello and Brandon Montour had more points this season. He's 6'7". We saw, you know, how well he played defensively in the playoffs. The Canucks had him matching up against Connor McDavid. You know, and McDavid only had two breakout games across that 7-game series between the Canucks and the Oilers. We know Myers isn't getting six, but if he decides to test the market, I mean, 4 times 3, is that out of the question? Like, this, he's a 34-year-old player, excuse me. This is his last chance to sign one of those deals that's not a 35-plus contract where things kind of shift. He's going to get a pay cut, but is there any question about sort of how difficult it still might be to find common ground, given sort of the money he'd have to leave on the table for him to come in at a number that fans in this market anyway would be like hometown discount? Because I don't think fans would look at four times three and say, man, Myers really did the team a solid.
JP, the first sentence out of JP's mouth today was, they know we want to be there. Like, what else do you need to know? He's not thinking July 1st. He's thinking Vancouver. Yep. He has informed his agent to get the deal done in Vancouver. It doesn't matter. It would have to be a colossal fail between these two to not get a deal done. If the guy hits the free agent market, I think he can get over four. But the Canucks to get him in the low threes would be a real, real good deal, and maybe 2 or 3 years. And, you know, that guy has taken a lot of heat in this market. You know, Canucks Twitter, and they calling him a giraffe and all that crap. You know what? This guy had a good year. You know, Travis Green played the hell out of him. Boudreaux played the hell out of him. And Rick Tocchet's playing the hell out of him. I mean, every coach he's had,
they don't care about the contracts.
They don't care about the contracts.
What Thomas said, sorry, Rick, but what Thomas said there about, you know, maybe somebody will come out of their boots to sign Tyler to his last big contract. And you just mentioned maybe Travis Green will pull for him in Ottawa.
Oh, there's
somebody who knows him and somebody who played him a whole lot, like Boudreaux and like Rick Tocchet.
What a great point by Don. And the other guy, if you're a right shot defenseman and you're hitting July 1st, you're going to get paid. Look at Kristanov. You know, I heard yesterday it's not, you know, they could command 4 years, and he's 34, I think. He just turned 34. They could command four and over five. So if you're a right shot veteran defenseman heading into July 1st, you're going to do fine. And if Myers wants to go, he doesn't, though. JP just told us he wants to get it done in Vancouver. But if that guy hit the market, he'd do fine, too. Right shot veteran D are going to get paid July 1st.
Well, and I think it's a good point, Rick, that you say when J.P. Barrie is so upfront, it's so rare for an agent to not hedge and say, well, you know, we like Vancouver, but we're exploring. You know, he was just so direct and honest, like, yeah, we want to be here.
No.
That tells you pretty much everything you need to know. Now, to your point about the right shot.
I'll be surprised if they don't. Yeah. I'll be surprised.
To your point about the right shot defenseman, he's not a UFA.
Likewise.
He's an RFA, but we know how robust the market always is for right shot defensemen. How much does that strengthen Philip Hronek's negotiating position, right? Especially if a deal isn't done before July 1st and there's this spending spree on UFA right shot defensemen. Does that make things a little bit more complicated for the Canucks on Philip Hronek?
Well, you have to give him a million more than what he actually wants just based on last week's interview. Don't we want more of Philip Hronek in the media? That was just so entertaining. And, you know, I mean, Darnell Nurse tried to surpass that today, and I think he fell short. It was just outstanding. Like, I tweeted out that I thought it was entertaining with the sound down. His eyes, I absolutely loved it. From a hockey point of view, you know, one thing that's big for him in Vancouver is that Quinn Hughes has had his best season, as a Canuck in the National Hockey League. Everybody believes that he's going to win the Norris Trophy. How much did Philip Hronek have to do with that? Maybe Quinn Hughes, I would think, is tired of changing partners left and right. But one thing that was said, and this is interesting, and I think this is going to have a lot to do with the Canucks' decision. I don't know why this didn't get talked a whole a lot. I dropped the ball. You certainly dropped the ball, Rick. But Patrick Alvin saying that he felt that Quinn Hughes and Philip Hronek could drive their own pair, each drive their own pair, which we saw earlier on. And then, of course, they settled into Hughes and Hronek as their number one pairing, and rightfully so. The season was successful. But I found that interesting. If they believe that Hronek can do that, if they truly believe that, I mean, you know, Hughes can do it, but if they truly believe that Hronek can do it, well, then I don't see any reason why they, you know, with an RFA and them controlling him for another year, I don't see any reason why he wouldn't come back.
Yeah, and if he did do his, if he controlled his own second pair, Hronek, then they wouldn't have to go out and get a Tanev. Then they wouldn't have to go out and get. And plus, if they
still need somebody for
Hughes.
You're
still in the third pair, but I could tell you right now, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens with Hronek. You've heard his name in the Carolina Netjes trade rumors as well, right? Carolina's got issues. They got four UFA defensemen coming up and some big ones too. So, you know, and they got, I think, another couple of guys who only got 1 year left on their deals. Their defense is in disarray. Man, the kid, Jalen Chatfield, we just saw today.
Yeah, the projection.
If somebody projected him at 5 years and 4.8. I mean, again, the importance of right shot D. And Jalen Chatfield's agent, if he was smart, would take him to July 1st because I think Jalen Chatfield on July 1st will do quite fine.
With, do we really need to see Hronek drive his own pair? I like his work with Quinn Hughes just fine.
Yeah,
but if you're
you
going
to, like,
if you're going to invest
that much, I
don't
need to
hear
Paul Simon without Garfunkel. I want to hear Simon and Garfunkel.
Hold on, but
what about Garfunkel
Paul Simon,
without Simon?
Paul Simon had some great solo albums, though. The concern is that Hronek's more Art Garfunkel Hughes or
that's
Dranter,
fine,
and that Hughes is Paul
that's
Simon.
Fine. You know what you. You say Paul Simon had some great solo albums. I don't listen to them. They're not. I don't regularly put them on. They weren't featured in The Graduate.
You're not a big.
Like, I don't know. I can't
Graceland
even name you a
fan?
Paul Simon song I like. I don't care.
Wow.
I want Sound of Silence, baby.
I'm just saying, if you're going to invest up to $8 million in a defenseman, you better be confident that they don't need to be stapled to Quinn Hughes. Like, you'd like to at least have options. It's your number one choice for where to play them.
Hey, if you elevate Quinn Hughes, I'll pay for that. That sounds great. Give me more of that.
Well, they had a good season, right? The team as a whole had a solid season. So do you want to mess with that? But I'm just playing off of what I heard at the during the end of the season interviews. And, you know, Patrick Helvin saying, hey, you know, maybe it's time for these guys to be split up and see if we can spread the wealth a bit. By the way, I'm with you on Paul Simon. It's never really hit me. Graceland, everybody loved that album.
It was good. Graceland was good.
Wasn't there.
Love Graceland.
I wasn't there.
Love Graceland.
A big
50 mess. Ways to Leave a Lover. And
yeah, come on.
Yeah. Yes.
Come on. What are we talking about?
Graceland was fine.
It's more than fine. Graceland's a classic.
I don't even know if 50 Ways to Leave a Lover was on Graceland.
Classic album. Anyways, we'll let you go.
Rick with his arms crossed.
Are we supposed to be
straight up?
Are we supposed to be talking
parka.
About 50 cents?
50 cents.
Are we supposed to be talking about 50 cents in Vancouver?
50 cents on the dollar. That's what you want Tyler Myers to get paid, Rick.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, we'll let you go. Listen,
I'm not going to watch that.
You're not a 50
okay,
cents
listen,
guy, right?
Let me get this in.
All right, go ahead.
No, I that's not my music. I don't bop and hop to that. There's
more
no
Paul
way.
Simon.
I love Paul Simon, but I'm not a 50 cents guy.
Maybe next year.
Will you quit
place.
The music stuff?
Go,
let me get
go,
this in.
Go.
Listen, not hearing the Canucks are close with Joshua, guys, sounds like a lot of work to do before a deal gets done. So we'll monitor that. But there seems to be a difference of opinion on what his worth is. So we'll keep an eye on that, guys.
All right.
And things can change with one phone call. You guys know that.
Of course.
Things can change with one phone call. You guys know. Yeah.
Thanks for that,
Thank
Rick.
Thank goodness we got that in right at
God
the end
you
of the
got
segment.
That in.
Thank you, Rick. All right, we'll let you guys go. We'll let you get out of the freezing cold studio. Donnie, you go to your appointment. We'll do this again next week.
Yes. Beautiful.
Right. 50 cents.
Thanks, guys.
50 cents. That is Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal from Donnie and Dolly on Check TV. You can watch them Monday to Friday, 10 to noon on Check. The crossover brought to you by Besant Motors, home of over 400 pre-owned vehicles and where the players go. 50 cents.
I'm never going.
That's an all-timer from
I'm never
from
going
Dhaliwal.
To get over. I'm honestly never going to get over Rick Dhaliwal dressed in like the sort of Arctic parka that you just Bond henchmen to wear at like the snow level. And just like arms crossed. Graceland was good. What?
I would have guessed Donnie was more of a Graceland guy anyways. But, hey, I'm glad somebody was on my side in that one. Okay, always a pleasure to do the crossover with those guys. And we will take a break. We'll come back with lots more, lots to weigh in, to dig into there from what Rick was reporting. We can talk a little bit about what Elliot was having to say about Tyler Myers as well. And on that note, we'll go to break. More Canucks talk coming up here on Sportsnet 650.
We'll be right back. Hey, it's Big Nizar. Have your say and join me on The People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
From the Kintec studio, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver, online at dunbarlumber.com. So to round up some of the things we've heard from both Rick Dhaliwal and Elliot Friedman earlier today on 32 Thoughts, Friedge saying, you know, there's some optimism from both sides that the Canucks and Tyler Myers will be willing to get something done. Also saying, interestingly, now this might just be that they have so many UFAs, but Friedman also saying he thinks the Canucks have a lot of balls in the air right now, a lot of stuff they're trying to get done, which definitely perked my interest. So we talked about it a little bit with Donnie and Dolly, but, you know, obviously for a lot of reasons, no surprise that there's optimism on Tyler Myers returning. I do wonder what it means for what the kind of domino effect for other players on the list is. And, you know, as JP Barry said, they're not first in line. So there might be other business the Canucks want to get done first before they put pen to paper with Tyler Myers. But is it as simple as it's a only one guy between Myers and Zadorov is returning, or is there still a path to Nikita Zadorov returning, or was he already gone? And this has no impact either way if they are able to get something done with Tyler Myers.
Well, you'd think the front of the line would be Elias Lindholm and Philip Peronik.
Yeah.
Just given their stature and, you know, the likely price point. I mean, no one will be surprised if those numbers start with 7, right? With everyone else, we're talking 5. Maybe they get over 5. But for the most part, on the bottom, you're sort of below that. So, you know, I think whether it's Joshua, Zadorov, you know, Cole, Lafferty, Bluger, et cetera. I mean, you'd set the over-unders all at like 5 at the max, right? Maybe Zadorov, you'd set it like 4.9 over-under. But for the most part, well under 5. With, I think, Lindholm and Hronek, you're talking 7.5 maybe?
Yep.
7?
Yep.
Right? So I would guess that those are the sort of bigger ones, the ones that you look at as front of the line, the bigger commitments. Because that's really how that's really how the Canucks think about it. Like, I think that's really philosophically how Rutherford and company look at this. Is like, you've got a pie, you've got to decide how to split the pie.
Yep.
In a way that, you know, allows you to have a good party. So you're gonna dole out the biggest slices first, and then work your way to the, sort of the scrap slices or the smaller slices, the more pedestrian slices for your glue guys. And you know, again, this is sort of where I think the rubber meets the road in this Canucks offseason, right? Like, there is absolutely space for this team to afford multiple big ticket items and still have enough space to fill out the roster with a similar approach to what they took last offseason, where you're hitting sort of, or you're swinging for a volume of singles, like a high volume of singles to raise the floor of your group to bring that balance. That, again, is philosophical for Rutherford teams. You know, so I would think the big, you know, Myers probably fits into that, you know, Ian Cole equivalent or Susie equivalent from last offseason. Whereas, you know, what you're looking at with Hronek and Lindholm would be more in the, you know, Kuzmenko type valuation from last offseason, like if we're to draw a straight line between those two. So, you know, and that's where, again, I think for me anyway, I look at it and think Hronek is the one that I would call indispensable, even though I think it's a really hard contract to win. Just because, again, like, you know, I keep coming back to the blue line analogy of Zach Hyman, right? I mean,
yep.
And this is it, to bring it back to the last segment in the crossover, you know, can Hronek drive his own pair? Who cares? Like, who cares? What I want to see is him drive, help this team drive like a plus 40 goal differential on a pair with Quinn Hughes. I don't want to see him be plus 10 or whatever in terms of like this team outscoring their opponent 5-on-5, you know, on a second pair or come out even on a second pair while Quinn Hughes plays with Noah Juulsen or something and outscores their opposition by less. Like, I want to see this team crush it at the top end the way they were able to with Hughes and Hronek together. I want to see Quinn Hughes keep playing with a guy who he thinks gets him the puck 5 or 6 more times a game and gives him more opportunities to do the sorts of things that A, fill the stadium, and B, help this team win games. So, you know, to sort of bring this full circle to the Hyman thing, it's like, who wants to see it? Do you want to see Hyman drive his own line? Or do you want to see him stand in the blue paint and be a human backboard for McDavid to throw pucks into the net off of? Come on.
But I think the difference in the analogy is, because obviously you're right, like there's huge value in being able to compliment a star player. Now, I think especially so in the like human backboard type of forward for the star forward, right? Like, I think that's an even more special case of it. But the thing is, even if you don't want Filip Hronek to be the guy to drive a second pair, you need somebody to drive a second pair, right? And so that's right. Where it comes down to a question of resource allocation for me. And in the Zach Hyman example, it's a lot easier to invest in a guy like Zach Hyman who you don't need to drive play for you. You just need to compliment Connor McDavid when you have Leon Draisaitl who can drive a second line for you, right? Like when you already have the play driving you need at the top of the lineup, then you can go out and make some of those luxury spending choices on the more complimentary players. My concern with Hronek is that you go get the complimentary piece for Quinn Hughes, or you lock up the complimentary piece for Quinn Hughes, but then you still need a guy who's going to be either your number three or like a really, you know, a two who's playing on your second pairing, who can drive that pair at a very, very high level. And then it's like, okay, do we have the cap space to go out and get that guy, right? If we're paying Filip Hronek what he's demanding. That's my concern.
But that's always going to be the case. Like, this team doesn't, if you bring back Filip Hronek, you still need another top pair caliber defenseman and arguably still two top four caliber defensemen, right? But certainly at least one more top pair caliber guy. The problem is if you don't extend Hronek,
then you need to
trade him or something. You need two.
Yep.
Right. Especially because I mean, I know people are low on Hronek because of how the season ended in the playoffs, but you know, it's not as if I've been this guy's like most vociferous supporter as a player, right? Like I recognize some of the limitations there, but I think at worst you're talking about, you know, a 2/3 on a team that mostly, when we're talking about their defense, we're talking about 4x4/5s. You know, I mean, it's a materially different player. And sort of when you get to the big ticket items, like if we're talking about the big ticket items, the guys that come before, you know, Myers, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think your risk profile on the 26-year-old who we know has this excellent fit on your top pair, like at the top of your lineup, is for me like far more palatable, right? Far, far easier. The medicine goes down far more smoothly than the long-term contract for the 29-year-old center who, you know, I know he produced in the playoffs and I loved his defensive game and like his toughness and the faceoff winning and the penalty killing. Would you say Elias Lindholm found chemistry with any Canucks player?
Not really.
Any Canucks forward?
No.
You know? Like, I mean, the Garland-Joshua line, and granted there's some context in terms of usage. Their usage spiked when they were playing with Lindholm in the postseason. They were more a second line than a third line. But, like, that line didn't carry play the way they had with Blueger earlier in the season, although they didn't with Blueger either in the playoffs. So, again, it could be usage context, but, you know, I really struggle to see the fit. I mostly see the downside. Like, whereas Hronek, I think you're going to be in tough to find a contract that's efficient, that's like a quote-unquote win for the team. I think there's all sorts of paths to finding, like, a fair deal where you're paying a premium, but you're getting a fixture on at the top of your lineup for a long time. With Lindholm, I see only downside. Like, I really think it's almost impossible to win or to find a contract that even helps put you over the top given that, you know, we'd look at him as a player who probably slots into the bottom six long term, especially if Pettersson bounces back here, and, you know, who's 3 years older and plays a position and plays a style that, you know, tends to age a little bit less smoothly than, you know, like headsy defenseman with big shot, right? It's not, you know, like Corona can even lose a step. It's not like he's a big dynamic puck carrier through the neutral zone,
no.
Right? He's a sharp outlet passer who's really good from the blue line in. You know, he's not the most physical defender, so you don't even worry about that side of it. He doesn't throw a lot of hits. He doesn't take a lot of hits, which tends to be good for a player's durability profile. You know, he's a guy who just can help Quinn Hughes have more of the puck, help him break it out, be a good outlet, and then he's got the shot to you know, allow Quinn Hughes to allow Quinn Hughes to drive more of a bottom line out of that, you know, withering persistence that he shows in terms of dominating puck possession. That's what I want. So, you know, to me, of the two big ticket items, like the it feels like in some ways, because Lindholm did more for this team in the playoffs, it's like you can throw out 7x7 and people don't go like, whoa. But if you throw out 7x7.5 for Hronek, people will be like, no way I'd pay him over 6.5. But I think the path to Hronek, even if you pay him 7.5 or 8, providing you with something like $7 to $7.5 million worth of value over the life of the deal per year, or at least like 6.7, it is pretty good. Like, I think it's a pretty safe bet that Hronek will at least provide you with top of the lineup type value. Lindholm, I think, you know, there's a real world where that's a far more inefficient contract for you, especially given how this roster is composed and Pettersson and Miller both being signed long term and on and on. I think there's a real chance that you could sign her, you know, Lindholm at a similar valuation and get like $3.5 million worth of value. You know, even if his game doesn't fall off just because of the fit.
Well, and I think, I mean, as nervous as the long-term extension Hronek makes me, there's no doubt he's the priority over Elias Lindholm. And I mean, let's go back. How did Filip Hronek end up in this organization? Because they didn't want to pay that commit that much money down the middle to three centers, and they traded Bo Horvat, and you just used those assets to get Filip Hronek, right? And it's the same conversation with Elias Lindholm. It makes no sense to pay him, you know, 7 million times 7 when Rick Tocchet has decided he's a center and you already have two centers that you're heavily invested in at the top of the lineup. So, like, I get doing your due diligence and exploring things with Elias Lindholm. It's just really, really difficult for me to see how that makes the most sense to spend your money for the Canucks, right? When you're already so heavy, it's so loaded at center at the top of your lineup, and you have so many needs elsewhere. It's really hard for me to square that. And again, it's like, well, that's why Hronek's here, is because they didn't want to pay Bo Horvat to be their third line center.
And when you've got Pugh Suter at 1.6, now, do I think if this team is a 109-point team again next season that you want to enter game one of the postseason with Pugh Suter as your third-line center? I'm sure you wouldn't. I'm sure you'd rather. But in terms of, like, the pressing needs, like, this team only has Noah Juulsen, Carson Soucy, and Quinn Hughes signed on the back end. This team averaged 16 shots per game in game 6 and 7 with a chance to advance to the Western Conference Final. Like, the top six needs are so much more glaring, especially given that there's no, like, you know, you're squinting and talking about like Lekkerimäki and Hoglander stepping up when you're talking about the top six, or an Ilya Mikheyev bounce back. Like, it's not like you have a compelling case.
Yeah.
Totally. Whereas Pugh Suter, third line center, it's like, I've seen that movie and I actually thought it worked. Like, I thought that was fine at frankly a lower leverage spot in the lineup. You know, the for me, the case to get another third line center is that, you know, I think it's best if you don't have to fix Suter anywhere in your lineup, but can sort of move him about to fix whatever issues you have, right? You have an injury in your top six, he's a top six winger. You have an injury, you know, you third line winger, great, perfect, like whatever, he can do it all, right? That's the value that he really brings. So anyway, I mean, for me, third line center is just like the lowest leverage of this team's many glaring needs. It's something you can build in mid-season. We saw the club do it this year to pretty good effect with Lindholm. I mean, there's no denying that he stepped up in the postseason. I think he'll be a good ad for somebody. I just don't see how you could prioritize him ahead of, you know, a myriad of defensemen. And especially, you know, given that we were talking about like Myers not being first in line, so who is, right? Of the two sort of $5+ million valuations that this team is staring down the barrel with expiring guys. Like, Hronek has to be prioritized to a far greater degree. And just one thing before we go, because I know we're up against it and have a guest on the other side. But I think the I want to see Hronek drive his own pair conversation is going to drive me nuts this summer. I can already see, like, I truly do not understand how anyone could possibly care. Like, we've seen Quinn Hughes play with a lot of guys, right? And what we know now is that if you can move the puck, if you're like a solid transporter with an offensive toolkit like Hronek, you fit a lot better with Quinn Hughes than all the other guys who we've seen actually work there for the most part, but not work to the same level that Hronek did. Like, Luke Shen works there, but he takes a little bit too much off the table offensively. You know, remember I used to say, like, I liked Shen with Hughes because he just puts the puck down low, right? And it's like, that's great. Like, he knew what he was and he played within himself and allowed Quinn Hughes to cook. But man, I like it a lot more when a guy can, like, attack downhill and then find Hughes with a cross seam. And then Hughes creates all this extra, like, man, that's sick. Tanev was the same thing. Tanev and Hughes was great for Hughes's rookie year, but Tanev also takes some stuff off the table offensively that Hronek brings that elevates that pair. Jordy Benn, Noah Juulsen, Tucker Pullman, like, you know, Hughes can play with whomever and it'll work because he's Quinn Hughes. But man, I thought the version of Quinn Hughes that we got this year, and granted Hughes's offensive sort of improvement is a huge part of that story too. But, you know, very much like Miro Heiskanen with Thomas Harley. Like, I don't want to see Thomas Harley drive his own pair? I don't care. He plays awesome with Miro Heiskanen. I just want to see more of that. Can Devon Taves be a top pair defenseman without Cale Makar? Who cares? Play them together. It's amazing. Just, we really need to, there's value in synergy. And that's what Hronek brings to the top pair. I don't care if he can drive a second pair with Carson Soucy, nor should the Canucks.
I get it. But as you've pointed out, I know on the show, like, similar results when he was with Ethan Bear, right? And I think that's the conversation, sure. Is can you get not 100% of the synergy, but 90% of the synergy at 50% of the cost, right? Like, that's it. Now, well, it's a lot easier said than done. I get that. We got to go to break, but I had to get that. No,
it's all good. And the thing is you can, but he's not going to score as much, right? And it might look good for 250 minutes, but Hronek and Hughes look that way for 1,200 minutes, which we have to wait more heavily. Okay, go to break. Sorry.
That's all right. Okay, we'll take a break. Jason
Buchla. Don't make too good an argument late. Come on.
I just had to get that in. All right, Jason Buchla joins us.
I know, it was just too good an argument.
He joins us on the other side here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.